Okay, last case for argument, United States versus Smith, Mr. Morris.
Good morning, Your Honor. Gareth Morris, appointed to represent Curtis Smith. There are four issues in this case. The government has conceded the first issue, which is the acceptance of responsibility guideline was incorrectly applied, and they've conceded there's plain error with respect to that, which requires a remand. Secondly, Mr. Smith, who is a truck driver, who's admitted that he stole and pled guilty to stealing a truckload of toys, was sentenced to a special condition of supervised release. And with respect to that, there, the government has also made a concession, which is that the language of the judgment is ambiguous. And in fact, the judgment, which is included in my brief, is inconsistent with the court's language, which I will read just one sentence. The court ordered that Mr. Smith, that you do not seek or obtain employment as a truck driver of a motor truck engaged in the delivery of freight or other goods. That ruling was then translated into the judgment, excuse me, the defendant is prohibited forever obtaining a CDL driver's license. The defendant is prohibited from ever being employed as a truck driver.
So if the court limits the prohibition on truck driving to the period of supervised release, do you have any remaining objections to the prohibition?
Excuse me, Your Honor. Yes, I do. It is overbroad. The language of the guideline is that the special conditions must be limited in time and in scope to a public purpose. And Mr. Smith, by this, the language of this condition, can't drive his own truck. Now, there's no reason, there's no connection to his offense which would indicate why it would be in any sense protecting the public or pursuing a public policy to stop that. Nor is there any reason why he couldn't drive a truck full of garbage or a truck full of rubble. And the court's concern and the concern of the government was that he not have the temptation to repeat his offense by stealing merchandise or goods which have value. And as he conceded in his sentencing, his problem is crack. And he steals things and buys crack. And so we're stuck with that admission.
Aren't the conditions of his release reasonably related to the nature of his offense?
Well, I concede that they are. Originally, we argued there should be none, but I think that you are correct that there should be some limitations on him. But these are overbroad, and the guidelines.
And in light of the United States versus Lewis, hasn't it been established that the ability to drive a semi takes special skills?
Well, that
I couldn't. Could you?
That's my next issue, Your Honor. And as you know, the guidelines have two requirements. First, that there be a special skill. I think truck driving is right on the edge of
talking a special skill.
I know.
To drive a semi. Now.
Well, the language, the definition of a special skill is that something that's not possessed by the general public, requires substantial education, training, and licensing. And examples
well,
are
that fulfills that, doesn't it?
Well,
don't they have to be specifically licensed to drive semis?
I'm not sure it fulfills. I don't want to quarrel with Lewis because I understand that I think it's in this circuit and it says a truck driver, at least in certain factual situations, can be deemed to have special skills. I think that it is on the borderline when you compare it to pilots, lawyers, doctors, accountants, chemists, and demolition experts. It's pretty close, but the more important point is that it has to play a substantial part in facilitating the offense or its concealment. Now, Lewis was a very complicated scheme, and the court made specific findings with respect to the theft of the hot dogs, which was the product involved in that case. There was concealment of the tractor trailer by removing the decals. There was phony invoices being faxed in. There are a whole variety of ways in which truck driving was a significant factor in the facilitation of the offense and its concealment, whereas in this case there was none of that. Mr. Smith simply opened the back of his truck and sold the toys shortly before Christmas to raise money.
He
didn't conceal his truck.
Maybe he should be prohibited from parking.
well, he certainly didn't conceal this very large vehicle. And so I think it was, and in fact, the court, in applying this guideline, didn't make any findings except to say that because he had the skill of a truck driver, he'd been able to obtain the load, which actually goes much more to the notion, the other part of the guideline, which is that there is a position of trust is violated, which would also provide for an upward departure. The final issue is the value of the loss. And as you can see from the court-appointed counsel, that's really the only thing he did below was to argue about the value of the loss, and never was it considered that the truck would be included. Mr. Smith emphatically denied that he had taken the truck. At the guilty, when he pled guilty, when there was a summary of the facts, he said, no, I didn't steal the truck, it's my truck. And this is the most important point with respect to this. He owned a truck. And it, the truck was being repaired by the company that he was driving for, and so they gave him a loaner. They held his truck. It was
But the government says his truck was only worth $5,000, so it made sense for him to sell the borrowed truck and write off his own truck.
Well, it's there is no evidence on the value of the truck. There is the PSR, you're correct, has a, I think it's actually $4,000 is the equity that the government asserts he had in the truck. But in effect, they hold his collateral, and the guidelines provide that in establishing the value of a loss, you should subtract the value of the collateral. Now, there's not much evidence on that. I concede below, but if it was his truck that he was driving, there'd be no question this it would be inappropriate to add into the loss the value of his own truck. He has a substitute for his truck, a loaner, and he's making payments on the truck that they're fixing. And the loaner actually was an older truck. I suppose the court can take judicial notice of that an older truck is worth less than a newer truck, but the truck he owned was a newer truck. It was a 1998 Peterbilt. So to summarize, the most critical issue is the special conditions where the government concedes the language is ambiguous. The acceptance of responsibility has been conceded. The value of the loss is, I think, at least there's substantial evidence. The standard is the probability. Standard is the preponderance of evidence. The evidence is that he owned the truck and that this was a substitute for it. There's no evidence to contradict that. The only evidence on the other side of this weighing is that he delayed in returning the truck. He did nothing to sell it or in any way to dispose of it.
Thank you, Mr. Morris. Mr. Hayes?
Good afternoon. May it please the court, my name is Brian Hayes. I'm a special assistant United States attorney representing the United States in this matter.
Now, you have a footnote in which you acknowledge that the conditions are just for the period of supervised release, they're not forever.
That's correct. That's how we interpret it.
Now, since the case is being remanded anyway, shouldn't that be corrected?
I don't think that there is a problem with clarifying the written judgment so that it's consistent with what the judge said at the sentencing hearing. That's correct, Your Honor, because the conditions were imposed for the term of supervised release.
Now, I don't understand why he should be forbidden to drive his own truck, right? He's not going to steal his own truck.
But he will be entrusted by others to deliver their goods, and the defendant has demonstrated over and over and over again.
How about if would he be allowed to have a wheelbarrow to deliver these goods?
I think a wheelbarrow would present the defendant with a much diminished ability to inflict financial harm on his
victim. How about a donkey with a large cart?
I think once again that the court below adequately picked an appropriate level in which it should prohibit the defendant from participating in delivering goods.
A team of horses with a very large cart?
Well, then I think we might be getting somewhere, Your Honor, where maybe there is a distinction.
What evidence, Mr. Hayes, is there in the record that the defendant disabled the global positioning system? What's the evidence?
The only evidence is the defendant's confession to the statement of facts provided by the government at the plea hearing. It was the evidence gathered by the investigators was that the geographic tracking and text messaging system had been disabled, and during the plea colloquy when the government stated the facts that underlie the plea, the prosecutor did state that he had disabled the geographic tracking and text messaging system, and the defendant did not disagree with the government's statement of the facts in that regard. He did state at the change of plea that he did not intend at the outset to steal
the
truck.
So there's another problem with these special conditions, and that is it seems that the reason the judge imposed them is not a concern about his committing further truck crimes, but the notion that he's a dangerous driver because he's a coke addict. Isn't that the judge's actual reason for the imposition of the conditions?
If you read the text of the transcript, yes, that is what he said. But I do think that the court should keep in mind that prior to that there was...
That's not proper. That's not within the scope of the provision authorizing these conditions.
That was the limited reason that the judge gave at the sentencing hearing.
Since we have to remand anyway, shouldn't he be told to reconsider and decide whether these conditions or some variant of them is actually proper in light of the sentencing guidelines, which constrain the scope of these conditions.
Yes, I think that the guidelines do require the judge to consider all the bases for the conditions. I just think that the previous discussion during the sentencing hearing, which focused principally on his long criminal history, I just feel that was probably something that was also underlying the court's decision in this regard, although it's clear that it wasn't...
The judge's mind is not what he said. He seems to be concerned with his fellow causing an accident, although it doesn't seem to be contested that he has these 2 million miles of accident-free driving. Maybe the crack keeps him awake.
That could be, Your Honor, and certainly if it's remanded in that fashion, that would be the government's, would continue to be the government's position that the criminal history would also support special.
But what about Mr. Morris's point that in deciding, well, I don't know if this makes any sense, actually, but his suggestion is that somehow Smith should be credited with the equity in his own truck, which he sacrificed.
I believe that the loss guidelines that talk about collateral, those are loan fraud cases where there is some sort of in computing the loss for loan
right.
fraud.
Okay,
cases.
So what you're saying that the loss of the truck was.
Complete.
Well,
and I don't know that they're holding this other truck that's owned by someone else, that they can necessarily somehow get the value of that.
Well, that would be the issue, wouldn't it? That is, if they can, if the owner of the truck can sell his truck and keep the proceeds, that would reduce the loss, wouldn't it?
I suppose if the company were entitled to somehow do that, that would diminish their loss if that was lawful for them to do so.
It's curious in a way. It diminishes the private loss. It doesn't diminish the social loss because, of course, the truck is... what happens?
It may then go, Your Honor, to restitution, I suppose, rather than...
Did the truck get sold piecemeal or was it sold as...
The actual truck in this case that he stole, that was recovered when he was arrested in Bridgeview and returned to the
country. Oh, right, okay. So the truck wasn't destroyed or anything?
No.
So the truck goes back to the company that lent it to him. Is that correct?
It goes back to his employer, and so there's no...
It goes back to his employer. Okay, but now, is there any way in which the employer can recover the equity on his... He borrowed the truck from... It's not his employer's truck, right? It's not Hasbro's. Okay, now I'm confused. Who owns the truck that he stole?
The company that hired him to deliver the toys to Iowa.
They own the truck?
Yes.
And his own truck is at some repair place?
According to the defendant, his truck is with his employer somewhere. The government never...
With the employer, with his... So the owner of the truck recovered the truck, but it also has his...
Correct.
His truck.
Whether they still have that now, I don't know, but at the time, that is what the defendant had said. The government had never invested any resources
so
in checking that.
So we just don't know
if
they sold it or whatever.
No.
Mr. Hayes, does the government intend to ask the district court for a larger departure on remand than was asked for in the first round of sentencing?
Well, Your Honor, in the first round of sentencing, the government, along with the judge and probation, had mistakenly come to the conclusion that we were starting at an adjusted offense level of 14 rather than 13, looked down the sentencing table at Category 6 to determine what the appropriate amount was. I do not think the government should be precluded from reassessing what it asked for and to allow it to take into account the correction of what the what I'll call the jumping off point is for the upward departure.
That's what I always worry about when I'm sitting up here, because on what basis should we allow a court to reconsider an issue that the government didn't raise the first time?
The government did raise it the first time by asking for the upward departure, and in crafting the upward departure, that is in some sense, particularly with Category 6 defendants, outcome determinative, because you can't look to Category 8 to analogize a Category 6 defendant to a Category 8 defendant, and this is incorporated in guidelines. They instruct you to look incrementally down the sentencing table to arrive at a level that the court thinks is appropriate.
See, I call these cases winning the battle and losing the war.
I think that could happen in this instance, Your Honor. I think that the district court, in fact, indicated that he was looking initially at a 70 to 87 month range, but in considering the government's request, was able to adopt the three levels requested by the government, because I'm assuming that he was satisfied to impose a 63 month sentence, which was at the top of that category. And I don't think that the district court should be precluded on remand from taking into account the correction, the rectification of that mistake, which is going to start him out at a lower level.
And then possibly going into a way higher level.
I don't know why the court would necessarily feel the need to go higher unless there was some new information that came out at the new sentencing, but it seems clear that the lower court had a particular guideline range in mind and was able to adopt the government's request and arrive at an range that the judge felt was appropriate.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hayes. Mr. Morris, how much time does he have? 2 minutes?
Mr. Hayes specifically asked the court for a three-level upward adjustment. He briefed it. The court commented on what an excellent brief it was. His brief specifically asked that from the guideline level that would be established under the law, there should be a three-level increase. The judge said, boy, I thought maybe it should have been more, but I will agree to the three-level increase and enter the sentence with a three-level upward adjustment. It would be punitive to sort of allow the district court to impose, by removing the thumb from the scales, but the mistake of not granting the third offense level adjustment for acceptance of responsibility, to now boost him up higher with no new facts, an issue that hasn't been appealed. It would be a kind of a punishment, which there's case law in this jurisdiction that says you cannot punish somebody for successfully raising an issue on appeal. The case is P-E-A-R-C-E. It's the United States opinion, 395 U.S. 711. As to the ownership of the truck, the court's understanding is correct. The very same person that employed him to drive this truck gave him a loaner, and they owned they owned or had sold him the truck and he was buying it from them. So there's only one entity. There was actually some related corporate entity, so that's not exactly right.
Well, so you're saying, so since they were sitting on his truck, their maximum loss was whatever the value of the truck was, their truck was minus $4,000 or so. Is that what you're saying?
That is correct.
Would that make a difference in the sentence?
If the entire value of the truck is not counted, it does make a difference in his sentence. I think my brief made a mistake. It would be a two-level, I think I said it was larger. It's a two-level adjustment. He would move from category, he would move down two levels and because the value of the load was less than $70,000 by everybody's count.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You were appointed.
I was, Your Honor. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Well, we very much appreciate your accepting the appointment and your vigorous efforts on behalf of the staff.